What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650.
You waited so long to talk. I never realized that there were sirens.
Yeah, we're hearing new parts of the theme. Well, I looked up at the monitor, because we don't stream the show, but we're always on camera so we can post videos and stuff. And I looked up the monitor in front of us, and producer Lena has left her giant, like, movie theater, like, movie set light
right
directly in front of my monitor. So I looked up and was just very surprised. Because Lena needs to be very well lit for Canucks brunch.
Fair enough.
That's fair. She has her own personal light, and I get it.
Yeah.
Interesting that she's never thought to light us better and make us look more attractive. It's never been high on her radar.
Well, there's only
so much you can do. Yeah,
exactly. I think picking your battles is, you know, discretion is the better part of valor, yeah, right?
Absolutely. It is Canucks Talk here. I'm Jamie Dodd. He's Thomas Drance. He covers the Canucks for The Athletic as well. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Brendan Batchelor is going to join us at 12:30. And we already have a text in from Chris and Duncan saying, this is going to be such a depressing show. Why? Did something happen? Has something happened that I'm forgetting about, Chris? But we'll see. We'll see how depressing a show it is.
Why? Why will it be that depressing?
Did you see the game last night?
I did. And it didn't go well.
It did not go well. All right. Batch at 12:30. Right now, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, April 3rd. And the headline is, and I was trying to think about how to appropriately phrase this because, you know, I don't want to say, oh, their playoff dream died, because it was pretty much on life support before last night anyways. I don't want to overstate the significance of that one result. The way I come up with it, the Canucks playoff chances, they fizzled out. They fizzled out, I think, last night. They were already basically done, and then last night was the fizzling out process. And I think it happened, actually, in a very appropriate manner, considering how this season has gone. It fizzled out with an embarrassing loss at home, 5-0. Against Seattle. And there's been some really, really tough nights at Rogers Arena for this team, and one more to more or less completely dash their playoff hopes for this year.
Yeah. I've been asking everyone around the studio before we went on, like, because my perception of it, I honestly thought the Canucks worked for most of the evening. Like, I don't think it was a great performance. Obviously, it's not a great performance, but
that's a hot take right there.
I didn't think,
listen, guys, I don't think they played their best.
I didn't. You're so negative. I didn't think that they quit by any means. Like, I actually don't think that was one of those, like, mid-effort games, like so many Canucks games that we've watched, you know, especially earlier in the season, right? That November, December, January window where, like, the vibe was off and you'd see, like, that dreadful performance in Carolina,
mm-hmm,
right? Followed up by that, like, narrow win in Toronto, followed up by, like, the getting just absolutely butt-kicked by the Winnipeg Jets and the LA Kings in quick succession, like, 6-1, 5-0, you know what I mean? It was just like, does anyone want to be here? Like, it didn't have that vibe. But I do think especially after the second goal, the Stevenson goal, it felt like you could just feel like an energy exhale, like a draining, yeah,
of the club's energy. We talked to Josh. What did, yeah, he say? He said there was
deflation.
I think that's a good way of putting it.
And I think that's right, because I don't think it was a dreadful performance by any means.
I think you could say they wilted.
Yeah, wilted.
You know what I mean? Rather than like...
But because
I get what you're saying. It wasn't like this. I mean, as much as the 5-0 scoreline looks really, really ugly, and it does.
The speed that the Kraken were able to attack them with had a bigger impact on the outcome of that game than, like, Vancouver's flagging
effort. Than any idea of, like, quitting or anything.
Yeah. Like, it, you know, even in the third period, they came out and, like, pushed for a bit before the Kraken got another rush goal. Right? Burakovsky's goal.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I didn't think it was the sort of performance where you can't hold your head high after it, but it doesn't matter. It's a 5-0 loss that seals your fate. And that's sort of how I'd put it, right? Fizzled out, I think, is fair.
And I think there was a notable lack of comeback push, which is something we've been talking about in recent weeks, right? They're really hard to kill. I think that would be the difference.
Yeah,
they weren't hard to kill last night.
You know
what I mean? Their backs were against the wall. They were on the mat, all of the cliches. And so often we've seen them pull off some sort of miracle or at least come close to doing it. And then there wasn't even like a real attempt at
it.
You know, there wasn't a gesture at it last night.
They didn't have their Black Knight vibe.
No.
Going by any means.
Just a flesh wound. No.
No.
That was more of an a flesh wound last night.
That was a devastating. That was the hit you can't take. That was the glass jaw punch. And so, look, I think the truth is that this was largely baked in after that Rangers loss. And it wasn't just the Rangers loss. It was also Pettersson and Hoglander both leaving the lineup, right? Team goes and actually gets 5 points out of their next five games, but, you know, pulled one out of the fire against the Devils, got a really bad goaltending performance out of Ilya Sorokin against the Islanders, right? You know, I think the next devastating blow was blowing that 3-0 lead in Columbus and then obviously losing to the Jets and then losing last night to the Kraken. You know, that's it. Like, it's over. Their shots of making it now are, what, 20, like almost 50 to 1?
Yeah.
Somewhere between 20 and 50 to 1, 35 to 1, something like that. It ain't good. And we now know with a greater degree of certainty where this goes. And that's what we were talking about yesterday, right? Like, the reality has now punctured the idea of like hope and compete and run the table. And every game's like game seven, you know, now it's just waiting out for mathematical elimination.
Well, and I thought you could really get a sense of that from watching and listening to Quinn Hughes at the end of the game and afterwards. When he spoke to the media, right?
What a badass, by the way.
And I want to get into that, but there was the shot of Quinn Hughes at the very end of the game.
Oh.
And, you know, Quinn Hughes, not the most jovial face out there, even in the best of times, but you could tell the emotion was there, and you could tell that realization sinking in. And then you hear him after the game, and I thought fantastic commentary, right? Where it's like, oh, are you mentally tired? It's like, well, we have no excuse to be mentally tired. Like, we had two guys go to the Four Nations. They weren't in that game. He didn't say that, but that's the subtext. Like, they weren't even playing tonight. So what's our excuse? Look at the Blues. They're not using that excuse. They've won 10 in a row.
Yeah. Well, and people were trying because Hughes has run out of gas.
Yeah.
And how could he not have, right? How could this guy not have run out of gas? This could not be further from criticism of Quinn Hughes when I say this, but it's been apparent, especially across the last four games, that this team is like, tested Quinn Hughes's limits and in fact found those limits. And so, you know, he's asked multiple times, like, is it hard? Like, you know, da da da. Are you guys emotionally drained? He was asked this week, are you injured? I'm 100%. Like, he's not taking these excuses. He's mad. He has played at so far below 100%. Whatever he says, he's 100% able to be in the lineup. That doesn't mean he's not
100% capabilities.
Well, no, and it doesn't mean that he's not deeply uncomfortable on the ice and on the bench. You can see him stand up to stretch during moments where he's getting a breather. You can see him grimace when he's on the ice. Like, it's incredible that he's been that uncomfortable, that effective, and playing that much. And so, you know, he's being offered these outs, excuses, just like explanations. If you ask the St. Louis Blues if they're tired of playing game sevens every other night and trying to win, they've won 10 in a row. They're not using that as an excuse.
I think they're having a great time. I actually think they're really enjoying it.
And that's the point. It's like, we're not measuring up. That's the issue.
Yeah.
Not we're tired. It's that we're not getting it done the way we need to get it done. And that's not good enough. And that's what he's saying. And like, just what a stone cold badass. I think more than anything, when I think about this season and some of what it means for this team going forward and this era of Canucks hockey and just trying to put it into proper context, which can be the most difficult part, right? Because we're extrapolating what the past means and projecting into the future to some extent when we try to write that sort of first draft of history style analysis. And to have wasted what I think is the most dominant individual season I've ever seen from a Canucks player. Right. The only real competitor that gives me pause is Luongo in 07.
Sure.
But I think it's that level. Like, I think Quinn Hughes was at an MVP level in the games that he played over the course of this season. I mean, he's 70 points in 61 games as a point per game plus defenseman at less than 100%. right? Like, this is a guy who they leaned on so heavily through a myriad of absences. And I think the truth is when they got to this point where they couldn't afford to lose games, I just don't think they got the best out of Quinn Hughes. And I think it's partly because they had to play him 28 minutes in games in November against Nashville and 28 minutes in games in November against Buffalo to get a comeback victory and 31 minutes in Detroit, right? 29 minutes against the St. Louis Blues and in a game that they lost in December. I mean, the minutes burden that this guy held down, and especially of late, I mean, since returning against the Flames, right, that Calgary game where clearly he started gutting it out, he's played over 29 minutes five times. Five times. Like, it's insane. To have wasted a performance of this caliber from your captain and for him to be carrying himself through this, for given how this season has unfolded, given how many nights I've been in the arena watching this team thinking, do these guys want to be here? Like, what's going on? To see on his face how much this mattered to this guy, and to see that with the level of commitment that he's shown in playing through all that he's played through and performing at an extraordinary level, to have wasted that is tough for me to take.
Well, and last night specifically, and I think go back a couple of weeks that we've been talking about, look, it's probably over, but here's what they're still playing for, and you want to see the effort, and the effort's been good and all that. Like, I think really since the Rangers game, I think a fair number of our listeners and fans have kind of been scoffing at the notion of talking about the playoffs, understandably so, but we've kept doing it, and one of the reasons is, and I know you pointed this out yesterday as well, you wanted to avoid the true hopelessness setting in as long as possible, and I thought what we saw from Quinn Hughes last night was a kind of a great example of why that's the case. Like, Quinn Hughes, I mean, I don't know how else to say it. It looked like he had a very sour taste in his mouth last night. And how could you not? With the realization that you're not going to be playing in the playoffs really starting to set in and take hold and the math becoming overwhelming. And more so, just as his commentary kind of illustrated, like the admission that they weren't living up to the standards set by other teams in their conference. That's what you were trying to avoid. Right? Is Quinn Hughes having that experience and ending the season with that impression, with that sour taste in his mouth? And at the very least, you were trying to push it as far as possible. Maybe you get there with one game left. Maybe you get there with two games left instead of seven games left. And now it's here. And we all could see how much the playoffs meant to Quinn Hughes individually, how desperately hard he was working to pull the team there. They're not going to be able to do it. And it's natural to wonder, okay, what does that mean for how Quinn Hughes views his future in Vancouver? We're not going to get an answer to that for a while. And maybe some people think we're focused too much on it, but it's like, what are you going to do? He's far and away the best player. He's one of the best players the team's ever had, if not the best player.
Definitely the best defenseman. He's the best player at his own position.
Yeah. So yeah, everything is going to be filtered through that. And I thought last night, I'm not saying it seals the deal or anything like that, but it's just another example of, like, you have to avoid those types of nights for Quinn Hughes if you want to keep him happy and keep him here.
Well, and I think, two, you need to now, especially with the depth that this team has accumulated on the back end, you need to find yourself a way of making it through next season where it takes something really special for him to play more than 27, 28 minutes a night in November. Not because he can't do it, but because he can, and we want to see him do it in May and June.
You want to pace. You want him to have something left in the tank now.
We want to see Quinn Hughes playing 35 minutes and being the best player on the ice in the Western Conference final, right? We don't need to see it in November against a non-playoff, non-conference opponent. Like, that has to be a goal. There is a level, I'm sure, like, I'll probably spend some time looking at it this summer, to be honest with you, and rolling through the data. But there is an optimal amount of time and minutes that Hughes should probably be playing, after which you begin to incur some diminishing returns.
Yeah.
Incurring diminishing returns on a player as good as Quinn Hughes, still better than not incurring those diminishing returns.
Still very tempting.
Yeah, still incredible. But, you know, I do think this club's going to have to take a long look at that, because this guy can make the difference all by himself, and I want to see that happen in the games that matter most, you know, in the spring of 2026. So look, I thought the other thing that was really noticeable in that game, I wrote about this a little bit, but like that it was one of the most potent symbols of this team's addiction to short-term thinking. Jared McCann, that really handed this team their hide and sealed their fate this season was a delicious amount of irony.
When I read your Athletic column, I guess this morning, and it was like, Jared McCann for Eric Goodbranson. I was like, oh, Drance is in his element right here. We talk in the Eric Goodbranson trade? Let's go.
But how can you not? And you know, because what struck me about it was after I saw, you know, after that game and I was thinking about it, like, the fact that since trading Jared McCann, he has outscored everyone that's played for the franchise except for Besser, Horvat, and Pettersson, like, blew my mind, right? The fact that the gap in total points that he recorded and JT Miller recorded in his years in Vancouver, right? One of the most productive Canucks stints we've ever seen is 25 points total across that span. Like, this was a great player. This was a great player. And people are like, well, he's been traded a lot of times. It's like, yeah, he got traded by the Jim Benning regime, the Dale Tallon regime, and then the Brian Burke regime in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know if I'm holding that against him. Anyway, but more than that, you know, I do think, and I tweeted about it early, because the Canucks had two opportunities on the power play right off the bat in that game. And once it returned to 5-on-5, you had a Matty Beniers rush chance with Kaapo Kakko. And on the very next shift, you had Shane Wright getting in on Demko all alone and Demko making a stop on a wrist shot. And then on the very next shift, you had Chandler Stephenson streaking through the neutral zone as a puck carrier, circling the net and setting up a point shot through traffic that deflected out of play. No harm done, but right there, it was just like, without Pettersson in the lineup, without Hedel in the lineup, the Canucks do not have the speed to match up with this team. And we're talking about Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're talking about a team that was eliminated like a week ago.
Yep.
A team that wasn't close. And yet with Stephenson, Wright, and Beniers down the middle, you know, Montour and Dunn on the back end and Joey Decord and Ned, it's like, how confident are we really that the Canucks are going to be 20 points clear or 15 points clear of the Kraken next season? Like, I don't know that I'm all that confident.
20 points, not confident at all. Will they be better than them? Again, I don't know about confident, but I guess Quinn Hughes is always, like, you'll always take the team of Quinn Hughes.
That's what,
you know what I mean?
I mean, the
but
Canucks
I don't know
are
about 15 to 20 points.
Well, they're 11 points clearer than right now.
Yeah.
And this has been a miserable season.
It's,
I mean,
true.
If you think the Canucks underachieved, like, if you're buying this team is better than the results indicate, then they should probably be 20 points clear of the Kraken
but
right
can,
now.
But
on
I can see Seattle being
talent.
Better next year, too, right?
Heck
so,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's why I'm saying I wouldn't just chalk up, like, oh, yeah, they should be 15 to 20 points better than Seattle.
I'm just saying, because of the Quinn Hughes factor, I'm taking Vancouver every time, right? The Kraken don't have Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
The Canucks have Quinn Hughes. And that's going to be enough, obviously, but if you're leaning entirely on one guy, like, injuries happen or underperformance happens or a guy runs out of gas down the stretch, right? I mean, it's close. I come out of that game just thinking it's closer than it should be almost,
mm-hmm.
given how the Canucks are positioned between them and the Kraken. You know, we all know how I think of the Utah Hockey Club, even if they're not going to get it done this year. Like, they're going to be really good next season. They might finish ahead of Vancouver this season,
mm-hmm.
especially when you look at their schedule. Anaheim's coming in on Sunday. They're only 7 points back of the Canucks. They're going to improve 20-plus points year over year. And I think they're really badly coached, which, you know, means that they could improve real quick. How much better are the Canucks than them next season, right? And then the Blues. Like, the Blues, this renaissance isn't being driven by their old guys. It's being driven by Bolduc and Holloway and Broberg and
Neighbors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Neighbors. Unreal. No, he's played really well. I've been really impressed. So, you know, the path to getting this team not just back into the playoffs next season, but into contention in a lot of ways, I feel like it gets more complicated. Like, that rundown doesn't even include the 7 teams that are going to make the playoffs in the Western Conference, like the teams with McDavid and MacKinnon, for example. Or the Golden Knights, the most successful professional sports franchise in the last 6 years. So I just come out of that game thinking, you know, this Kraken team, like, they're still far away. They're not close. And yet I even view them as, like, threatening from sort of how Vancouver is positioned. And given the stakes of next season and the Quinn Hughes question and on, I feel like that's a pretty tough spot for this Canucks team to end this season on.
All right. Not a ton of other things to get to in the whiteboard today. No entries into the broadsheet, although I'm sure that it'll be broadsheet season before you know it here once the season wraps up and we start really looking ahead to the offseason. Lineup notes as well. It's a day off for the day for the team today. They'll get back at practice tomorrow. They've got the back-to-back with Anaheim and Vegas over the weekend. And I guess now the question starts to become, is this sufficient for shutting Quinn Hughes down? I don't think it will happen until they're mathematically eliminated, anything like that. But are they far enough out of it now that you start to see some different lineup considerations come in? Again, I wouldn't expect it until it's mathematical.
Yeah.
That's usually how teams handle it, but we'll see. And I think it's like Monday. They could be mathematically eliminated by Monday, depending on results, how results go. So at least that's what they were saying on the postgame show. So take it with a grain of salt from...
I
don't know if Pickens had checked the math.
No, that's probably right. Their tragic number is 5, so they'd need a combination of, you know, they need 3 outcomes, basically. You need at least 3 outcomes to be mathematically eliminated here.
Yeah.
So that sounds right to me.
Playoff odds all the way down to 3%.
Playoff odds, not good.
All the way down to 3% in the Athletics model, so... Yeah, that about sums it up. They're 8 points back of both Minnesota and St. Louis with a game in hand on each. So the max they can get to is 95 points. So Minnesota and St. Louis only need to pick up 6 points apiece.
Yeah, no, you're right mathematically, but you got to add the tiebreaker.
Oh, sure.
The Canucks are out of games to catch those teams and the tiebreaker, so it's 5.
Yeah, so they can get to 95 points. That's the max. So they basically just need to pick up 5 points. Minnesota and St. Louis.
Yeah.
Well, no, because they'd be at 94. They need to pick up 6 points.
So you're right. Sorry, my bad.
Come on.
Canucks are plus 2,000 to make the playoffs now. That's a
pretty long odds.
4.7% implied probability. It's not great, Jamie.
4.7 implied probability.
Yeah.
There you go. So the market bullish.
The odds on the somewhat more. Wow. Yeah.
So buy the dip. Buy the dip for the Canucks. All right. That is the whiteboard for today. We will take a break here. Keep sending your texts in. I flagged a bunch during that segment. Obviously, people have lots of thoughts about not only the game last night, what Rick Tocchet had to say after the game we can get into, and just where things stand going into the summer now, looking ahead to the summer and the offseason for the Canucks. So we'll dive into all that later on in the show. Up next, though, Brendan Batchelor, the voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. He joins us next on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.